Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. It's another solo episode, something I have to get off my chest, so here we go. This will come as no surprise to many or maybe even all of you, but leftists hate fathers and men. They hate mothers and women, too, as is evident from their relentless push to redefine them out of existence, but they hate fathers and men more than they hate anything, even capitalism and freedom, because strong, godly males are the first and last defense against the left's totalitarianism and their obsession with abolishing the nuclear family. A case in point is the Father's Day just passed, when the reliably subversive New York Times chose to run an op-ed celebrating, in comic book panels for its mentally challenged progressive base, a trans woman cosplaying as a dad. An even more recent example is a new opinion piece in the Times with the literally triumphalist headline, "The Boy Scouts Let in Girls Almost a Decade Ago. It's Been a Triumph." The article was written by Erica Song, a mother and Girl Scout troop leader who gushed about how some of the girls in her troop, including her 8-year-old daughter, signed up for what used to be known as the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts went co-ed, you may recall, in 2017, and changed its name to Scouting America a year ago. Song wanted her daughter to experience the same physically demanding challenges and learn the same outdoor adventure skills as her son, building campfires, backpacking, rafting, becoming leaders. Apart from the passing mention of her son as a Cub Scout, she refers to boys in the article only negatively when complaining about how the girls were sometimes treated as quote-unquote intruders and catcalled by boys in other troops, and when she contemptuously dismisses objections that scouting should be a space just for boys by saying, quote, "The logic that a girl's excellence is a threat to a boy's development has nothing to do with fairness. Instead," she claims, "it only protects mediocrity." Song also claims that girls invigorate scouting rather than weaken it because they model, for both boys and girls, quote, "what it looks like to earn your rank without shortcuts," unquote. Her assumption here seems to be that the boys didn't earn their ranks without shortcuts until girls came along to show them the way. She concludes by noting that, quote, "these young women will grow up to be doctors, engineers, leaders, colleagues, while the boys will one day work with them and for them," unquote. So, turning the Boy Scouts into a co-ed space, literally erasing the word boy from the organization's name, by the way, the same has not been done for the Girl Scouts, means, quote, "we are preparing them for the real world," unquote. Tragically, she is right about that. Scouting America now shows boys that they serve no purpose or function in a, quote-unquote, real world that has been feminized by more than a half century of cultural Marxism, because girls and women have been, and continue to be, socially engineered to replace them. The message boys have been battered with for decades is that their sex is an unnecessary obstruction to female self-actualization. The narrative presented in this praise of Scouting America's co-educational evolution is as familiar as it is flawed. It relentlessly pushes the late-stage feminist orthodoxy that every male-dominated institution is inherently exclusionary, that girls must constantly break down patriarchal doors to prove their worth, and that any male resistance to this integration stems purely from fragile egos defending mediocrity. This view completely misses the defining sociocultural crisis of our era, the systemic, pervasive decline of young men. To claim today that young women are constrained by structural barriers is to willfully ignore reality. By virtually every quantitative metric, women and girls face no systematic barriers to success. If anything, they dominate modern institutions. Girls consistently outpace boys in primary and secondary education, graduate from high school at higher rates, and comprise nearly 60% of college undergraduates. They earn the majority of master's and doctoral degrees. Corporate boardrooms, government initiatives, and academic grants specifically target, promote, and elevate female talent at every level. The narrative of female disadvantage is a long outdated framing that refuses to acknowledge that young women have won and the playing field is entirely open to them. Meanwhile, young men are falling off a cliff. As other writers have noted before me for many years, we are witnessing an historic, quiet collapse of the American male. In educational alienation, for example, boys are overwhelmingly more likely to be diagnosed with learning disabilities, medicated for behavioral issues, suspended, or simply drop out of the system entirely. There's economic displacement. Millions of young men have exited the labor force completely, trapped in a state of extended adolescence and isolation. And then there's mental health catastrophe. Men account for roughly 80% of all deaths by suicide in the United States, driven by a profound lack of purpose, community, and belonging. Yet when the all-devouring feminist gaze targeted the traditional Boy Scouts, it saw not a critical refuge for struggling young men, but another conquest for feminist domination. Oops, I mean integration. The argument that girls invigorate boys' spaces by offering superior discipline and faster maturity misses the fundamental psychological point of single-sex development. It is a well-established developmental reality that girls mature faster socially and biologically than boys during adolescence. Placing girls alongside boys in their formative years does not elevate the boys through healthy competition. It frequently crushes their confidence and drives them to withdraw. Developmental equality requires meeting boys where they are, not forcing them to compete against accelerated female maturation in the very spaces meant for their growth. Boys require a specific kind of environment in which to thrive. They learn more readily through action, risk-taking, physical challenge, and unfiltered camaraderie. In a single-sex environment, a boy can fail without the debilitating shame of doing so in front of female peers. He can be unpolished, awkward, and hyperactive, gradually refining those traits into self-command under the mentorship of older men and alongside a brotherhood of peers. Contrary to the New York Times' dismissive attitude, male-only spaces foster a unique, indispensable form of brotherhood. True brotherhood is not built on abstract moralizing. It is forged through shared hardship, physical exertion, and collective responsibility among peers who understand one another's innate disposition. When young men are given a domain of their own, they learn to channel their instincts into constructive service, discipline, and mutual support. By taking away dedicated male spaces, society deprives young men of the specific mentorship and camaraderie required to transform raw energy into mature, responsible manhood. Introduce girls into those spaces, and the dynamic shifts instantly. The space becomes performative. The natural, messy process of male bonding, what critics dismissively label as boyish mischief, is quickly policed, moralized, and replaced by standards of emotional maturity designed by and for girls. To dismiss male objections to this shift as a desire to quote-unquote protect mediocrity is a deeply cynical misunderstanding of boyhood. It assumes that the only value of an institution is a hyper-competitive, meritocratic rank rather than the safe developmental crucible it provides for those who need time to grow. Men are not demanding that Girl Scouts open its doors to boys to fix a hypothetical lack of male perspective in female spaces. We recognize intuitively that young women too benefit from strong, supportive, single-sex environments where they can build confidence without male distraction. Why is that same basic empathy denied to young men? Why is a space dedicated exclusively to the cultivation of young women celebrated as an empowering sanctuary, while a space dedicated exclusively to young men is branded as a bastion of exclusionary patriarchy that must be dismantled? Well, we all know why. Feminism demands it. The feminization of society demands it. The abolition of the family demands it. The queering of the West demands it. I have daughters. They're all still too young to be making their own way in the world, and I certainly want them to have every opportunity to be the people, the women, that they want to become. I want them to have every option available to them to pursue whatever it is they want to do with their lives. I want the same for everyone else's daughters. But they have those opportunities. They have those options. I can't think of a single door that's closed to them, except perhaps becoming Pope, although the Archbishop of Canterbury is a woman, so it's not impossible to think that in the near future we might have female popes too. Mission accomplished, women. I also have a son, my youngest child. I also want every opportunity and option open and available to him to become the man he wants to be and to pursue whatever it is he wants to do. I don't want him derailed along the way and demonized and emasculated by a feminized culture that views traditional masculinity as toxic, that smears masculine leadership and success as patriarchal oppression, that condemns him for a rape culture, which doesn't exist in the Western world, by the way. For more than half a century, there's been no lack of programs, cultural narratives, or institutional capital dedicated to lifting up young women. They have every tool, every advantage, and every open door imaginable in the modern world. The feminist pretense that women in the West are oppressed in a Handmaid's Tale patriarchy is just a laughable lie. The erosion of dedicated male spaces has left a generation of young men adrift, lacking positive male role models, unstructured physical challenge, and authentic brotherhood. When society tells young men that their unique developmental needs are unnecessary, or worse, that they are inherently poisonous, they do not simply adapt and thrive alongside young women. They check out. They retreat to virtual worlds, video games, and online subcultures that promise the belonging and status that physical institutions no longer offer them. It's easy to write a triumphalist story like the one in the New York Times article about a daughter earning the rank of Eagle Scout. It fits cleanly into the modern cultural mandate. But the real casualty of this narrative is the boy who quieted down, stepped back, and eventually dropped out of his troop because the one space built specifically for his developmental pace ceased to exist. And because society's relentless message is that girls matter and boys will be working for them. Until society stops viewing male-specific development as a threat to progress, we will continue to watch more generations of young men sink into despair, alienation, and quiet collapse. As I frequently note, an emasculated civilization is a doomed one, and this is the suicidal future toward which we are hurtling, in which the New York Times is celebrating. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.